Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. Hello, Katie.
Hey.
Welcome back.
We are back.
You said you'd be back as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I said, come back, and you said, I will.
Yeah, I did.
And here she is.
I actually kind of want a podcast now.
This is her training. Yeah. This will be a particular bit of training because we might be here for a while, but let's see. If you didn't hear Katie's last appearance on the podcast, I would recommend getting across that now. We covered a good amount of stuff there, do you feel?
Yeah, we did.
In terms of your story, you as a person, and the only word I can think of is the roller coaster of the past 5 years of injuries and physical setbacks and everything you've been dealing with. There was a lot to get through, so we gave kind of a good overall picture of your journey to date. But I think you as well felt that we'd only really scratched the surface there.
Yeah, for sure, because after we went for dinner and kind of got into it a little bit more, yeah, there's a lot more that I can speak about, and I want to speak about it because I want people to listen and maybe it resonate with them and help them on their journeys and feel better about the position that they're in.
That's great. So we're back and we're ready to delve into it. So you've got a good idea of the physical journey. If you haven't, go back, listen to part one and get to grips with that. But now we pick up and we're getting much further, I guess, beneath the surface and into the details of the emotional toll and the other things that were happening that a lot of people, onlookers and maybe even people in your life, didn't know a lot about. So there will be laughs, don't worry. But
of course, always.
But no, there is some very serious stuff in here. So Katie, let's pick up with, in the previous episode, you were talking a little bit about some of the trials of the last 5 years. And you did say there was a particular low point where you went to Ian Bates, who's the head of women's tennis at the LTA, and you used the words, cried on his shoulder, essentially.
Yeah.
Because the situation had got to that extent where you didn't really see a way out of what you were dealing with. In retrospect, was that actually your lowest point, or was that just a low point in the whole story?
I would say it was the second lowest point.
Okay.
There's been a lower point since then.
Which
I did speak about a little bit on the last one when I was in India.
Of course.
That was my lowest.
Yeah, so that incident with Ian and looking for help with which injury was it at that point?
That was the shoulder, because I'd been out for a year at this point, and I just, it was not getting better at all. Like, it just kept flaring up and being painful when I was playing. So that was more of a, I don't know how I'm ever going to get back to tennis. And that was, yeah, not what I wanted to happen at that point.
India this year, that was the freak accident of when you did your ankle.
Yeah, like minorly sprained it again for the second time on the same ankle that has tendonitis. So it was just one of those things where everything had piled up and it was one too many things, and I'd been very excited for the trip, so I just felt like I couldn't keep coming back, and felt stupid to keep coming back, really.
So you were ready to hang the racket at that point?
Yeah, completely ready. I was looking at flights to Australia.
For how long were you in that headspace?
I only really got out of that headspace when I started playing matches again at the Pro League and really enjoyed playing the matches. It was a weird one because I wasn't out of the headspace of my career could be over, because I didn't know how my body was going to respond. But my mentality had switched a little bit to, okay, wow, I'm actually really enjoying competing still. So let's just see how it goes and let things kind of happen and try and stay on the court.
In that moment in India, your mum was with you at the time, which was something of a blessing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, pretty lucky, because I genuinely think I would have gone to Australia. I don't think I probably would have flight moded my phone. Well, maybe not flight mode, because I couldn't have booked flights.
Problem there, big problem.
I would have not responded to anyone and probably booked flights and told my best friend Scarlett that I was coming to Melbourne.
And stayed there indefinitely?
Yeah. just, you know, tried to figure out something. I don't know what I was thinking.
But she was immediate, I guess, emotional support, yeah, your mum, on that front, when for something to happen. So, and actually, since we last recorded with Katie, there was an incident in Nottingham, week 3, after everything that we detailed on the previous podcast. Katie's hip caused us some more trouble in Nottingham. It was the hip, right?
It was the hip.
So many issues now that I can't actually work out where we are. But
well, yeah. I also have hip tendonitis as well that I've had for 9 months. And when that flares up, it can go sharp and feel like I've strained it. So in Nottingham, it was like a very minor strain and I did panic a lot. And to be honest, I wouldn't have been able to finish the match competing wise and to try and win, because in my head I was like, I'm gonna have to compete for another hour here and then back it up the next day. Is it worth potentially making this a lot worse? Honestly, I would have rolled my serve in and just let, like, finish the match, but the tears were coming, so I was like, I need to get off the court ASAP.
And it was highly competitive back end of the second set. You'd been, yeah, up in that second set, so yeah, the vision of having to do that for another
hour probably
was a bit much, I'm sure.
I think I would have done something a lot worse.
But you did come off in floods of tears, understandably. Sorry to expose that one, but I know people around at the time knew that. And I'm just thinking, the reaction, I guess, must have been similar in India, and therefore having your mum there who's kind of seen it before to kind of help you work out your next steps and not, yeah, let you get too low. I was going to use the term lifesaver, but career saver for sure.
Yeah, career saver. I mean, it's hard because I was... It felt different in India. Even in Nottingham, it didn't feel like, as much as I reacted crying-wise, it didn't feel as bad, just purely because I felt like my game was kind of really back to getting where I can be.
Won that Pro League week last month.
Yeah.
Helpful.
Helpful. And it didn't feel so far away. Whereas in India, I think it just felt quite far away still as well. And I couldn't face coming home to have to be off the court again and rehab again and build up again. Whereas with the hip, I kind of knew it wasn't bad enough. And I also knew I had to do something about my shoulder. So I knew I was going to have to take a break at some point to sort my shoulder. So as much as I reacted quite ridiculously.
You can't throw yourself under the bus like that. It's, with everything that's happened, I think it's a very understandable, yeah, reaction.
I think it was a disappointment at the fact that I couldn't complete that tournament, because I was actually really loving competing and I wanted to fight to the end of that match. And I knew, okay, at least I've done the hip, I can kind of sort my shoulder out at the same time and then get ready for the grass. That's what I kept telling myself, even when I was crying, but I was feeling sorry for myself.
Understandably, again. But we've already established from what you said there that now you're in a much better headspace, more, yeah, focused, feeling better about yourself, your tennis, and therefore able to deal with these incidents much better, would, yeah, you say?
I think so. My initial reaction is obviously like I'm upset and everything, but I think I came out of it much quicker this one anyway.
So in, yeah, this moment you have the ability to compare. In India you had the ability with your mum to kind of go somewhere else and just forget about tennis, yeah, for a few days, focus on you, get into a better state of being. I guess though, as you kind of continued the push up the tennis ladder, we touched on in the last podcast, you reached your career high rankings in 2018, you were in a really good spot with your tennis. I guess there have been previous injuries where you've not been able to run away from it, no, as it were. So in those down moments, you've had to stay within it, yeah, and the way out has not looked as straightforward. So
no,
what were some of those moments for you? What were some of the darkest moments, and do you think people know the full extent of those?
I think some people do, but I think I would want to speak about it because if other people are feeling that way when they're injured, then they can, I guess, understand that it's actually very normal emotions. I think people don't speak about it enough. Like, because tennis has been such a big part of my life, when all of those injuries were happening, I felt like that was my identity. So if I don't have tennis, who the hell am I? What am I going to do with my life? It was like panic. It was feeling like I had no worth. Like, why are my friends my friends? Like, if I'm not a tennis player, which 100%, like, when I really think about it, of course I know my friends are my friends because of me, not because of tennis. But when you're in that mindset, it's really hard to see that side of it. And I think it can be a normal emotion for tennis players, like a very normal emotion. I've definitely had conversations with people where they'll end up admitting that. But yeah, I don't really know where I'm going with that.
Like, so people will admit it to each other, maybe if there's a friendship level, yeah, but not talk about it publicly.
No, exactly. And I think, at least when I was younger, I never really thought that that was a normal emotion. So I guess that's where I'm coming from, is I want younger players who are coming up to understand that that's, yeah, a normal reaction, and that you have to work on those things and have a balance in life to know that when things go wrong on the tennis court, that that is not your worth. Like, you're not a number, and you have other parts of your life, and you can do other things in life. Yeah.
What did working on that look like for you? And were you able to identify that you were in that position straight away and crack on immediately or not?
No, I've got better at it. Like, there was a time, the lowest will go with it. It's like I didn't get out of bed for like 3 days. I didn't want to get out of bed.
When was that?
That was kind of a little bit during the grass season, and like I had to go off social media because that was like painful to watch other people. I also feel like I would feel bad towards myself as well, because I'm so fortunate in life and I have so much, and my family is great and my friends are great, that I felt bad that I had such strong feelings of like being low and sad and worthless, I guess is the word. Yeah, I felt really bad that that was how I was feeling, because there's so much worse in the world that can happen. And at the end of the day, this is only tennis. Like, how can you be that low just for tennis when nothing bad has happened in my life? So, you know, like, how can I allow something like that to get me so low? And I had to really work on what I could give to myself and my friends, or the world, I guess, in like another job that would make me happy after tennis. I mean, I'm still working on that because I really don't want tennis to be over yet. I don't really know what I would want to do afterwards, but I definitely have more self-worth because I've had to like, yeah, learn how to appreciate myself, I guess, when I'm not playing.
Sure. Well, that's great that you're moving in that direction. When you were at that extreme low point, let's take the 3 days in bed, yeah, for example, which is a really interesting point, by the way, because the Brits take center stage during the grass court, yeah, season, but they do it on the court, and no one thinks about what it must be like for those that are injured and set back, yeah, and not actually able to take part in, yeah, that.
Actually, the way I felt that year, now if I am competing in the grass courts this year, which I hope I am, I've already made a pact with myself when I was in that low point, if I ever get back, I will not post a single thing during the grass season until, you know, say I got a wild card into Wimbledon, say I like went through pre-qualies and I got that wild card. Obviously you have to post to show your appreciation towards the All England. That would be the only post I would do throughout the season, just because I know how that felt for me and how hard that was for me to see. I wouldn't want to put that on someone else.
So as you struggled with that, and as I guess you came to the realization of what you were dealing with and these thoughts you were having and how you felt like your feelings weren't valid, at what point were you able to open up to anyone about that? At what point were you able to put that into words?
So I have like a psych slash counsellor type thing. I wouldn't say she's a psychologist for tennis or anything. It's more just general life, who I've had since I was 21. So I did manage to speak to her about it, but it took a while. Like, it took maybe 3 weeks after those days to then openly or open up to her about some of the thoughts I was having, whereas with my friends, I did speak to a couple of them after those few days. I don't know, some of the things I said pretty honestly, but not all of the thoughts, I guess. Whereas the counsellor has heard all the thoughts.
It's good that someone has, because just to get that out there,
yeah,
just to speak it, I guess feels like a load is coming off your shoulders, because, I mean, there's a kind of a cheesy phrase that says a trouble shared is a trouble halved,
yeah,
but there's some truth to that.
Yeah, 100%, because then she could help with just telling me that it's normal that I'm feeling like that, or it's, yeah, I've got strong feelings, and she can probably see why, because of the type of personality I am and what I've put into tennis. And yeah, I mean, to be honest, before I did get injured, I don't think I had a good tennis life balance. I think I gave so much to tennis that if I was allowing myself to go to a friend's party or something that was like midnight, I would genuinely feel bad that I was out till that time, that that's gonna stop me from getting to where I want.
Would it?
No. Absolutely not. And that's one thing I've learned through the injuries, is that you've got to enjoy your life as well and have other parts to it. So yeah, that's one thing.
So is that what the balance now looks like for you, yeah, in terms of life and tennis?
Yeah, because, you know, people might judge on social media from like snippets of what they see, and me being out with my friends or something in between tournaments, I wouldn't be drinking at this point. That I would be driving, and it's in the day, and I might stay out till like 11 or 12 on the Friday and then play the next week on the Tuesday. But to me, that's like acceptable now. Obviously, if I'm drinking, I don't think that's acceptable. Like, I wouldn't get drunk and then play a tournament 3 days later. For me, that's no.
But you know where that line is.
Yeah,
now.
I know where that line is, and I'm happy with the line. Whereas I think before, I wasn't really happy with the line, because I was isolating myself from those more like enjoyable times with your friends, which I think you definitely need to stay sane.
It's a good reminder, particularly in the age that we're living in, where everything and everyone is so accessible with social, yeah, media, with this and that. All of us can fall into the trap of thinking that we know everything about everyone from a social media post, yeah, from a conversation.
Exactly. And I think judgment as well. We all judge way too quickly. I mean, I still do. Like, I'm trying to work on that. Not judge people, but it's so easily done.
And so easy to assume. Another thing that I wanted to ask was, not necessarily those 3 days specifically, because you were in bed, you were kind, yeah, of away from the world, but in other instances, you would have been at the National Tennis Center, you'd have been rehabbing, training, yeah, when all these things were going on, and internally you'd have been very low, as you've said. Yeah. Would people that you interacted with have been able to tell that or not?
I think... Well, sometimes I would just come out and say, yeah, no, I'm not great. But other times I would, yeah, be happy. And I get energy when I'm around people, so it's quite easy for me to suddenly get energy. And then the moment they leave, it's like, oh, wow, like, I feel bad again. Or if I go home from NTC after being in the gym with a few people, I've gone from, like, probably dancing in the gym to... I'm still injured. Like, this is Groundhog Day. What am I doing? Why am I here?
So you, yeah, respond to the atmosphere that you're in.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
So it's again, something that I think about a lot is when people say, check in with your friends that are smiling, that are laughing. We heard a lot of that in the last episode.
Yeah, we did.
You even said it at one point. You said we cover it with laughs, and that's what you do. Which is why I was specifically wondering in that situation whether people would have known, because with the busyness of life and with everyone else getting on with what they're doing and this and that, it's easy to miss.
It is.
But it's, again, a good reminder to people that these things can be happening beneath the surface, and it doesn't matter what level the athlete. It could be top 500. It could be top 50.
Yeah.
But it's a very real thing that obviously people are not necessarily going to talk about unless asked, because we only post the highlights reel.
Yeah, and also if people do ask you, like, of course there's some people you don't want to drop it on because they're not close enough to you, or, you know, no one ever expects someone to come back to the question, how are you, with, and you know what, actually really bad. Like, I've cried all morning, but, you know, you're not going to answer that, like, that way.
But you seem like more of a person that might.
Can. Yeah, I have. I have been like, yeah, just not great. But then I won't really let them have to deal with that. Like, if they try and question it, I'll be like, oh, it's fine, honestly, don't worry. Like, I've got my friends to speak to.
The great British reaction.
Yeah. But the thing is, in that moment, I probably don't want to speak about it. It's just, I can't always come back with, yeah, I'm great, thanks. So sometimes I do have to tell the truth.
Always a good
thing. Well, I always tell the truth.
But sometimes it can be half the truth.
Yes.
And not the full truth.
You know, you just give them a snippet.
Sure. And these are struggles that I'm sure are prevalent. There are other struggles that might also be prevalent among the athletic sporting world that don't get touched upon, I feel, at all. And we're going to sidetrack a little bit here. We're going to be talking, just as a heads up, about eating disorders and that impact. So just as a heads up for what is coming up, this is something that, before you mentioned it the other week, and you've said you're happy to talk about this.
Yeah, I am.
I wouldn't have guessed, and I followed your career for, I'm going to say, about a decade at this point, and it's not something, I guess, that I was looking for, but not something that I don't think I would ever have picked up on, particularly because, rightly or wrongly, you have a vision of an athlete who has to be in this level of fitness and has to be fueling themselves with X amount of this substance and this food and be in this kind of place. So maybe that's just a bit naive of me to think that it wouldn't, well, clearly very naive of me to think that maybe it wouldn't affect, or not even to go down that route. I guess the starting point here is, was this triggered by anything that you were dealing with in terms of the injuries that we were talking about, or did this begin long before that?
It began long before. I've had it since I was 14, and I've been told many a time that the injuries I've had are probably from not eating properly for so many years, and that also didn't help with the mental side of things when I was going through it, because then I was kind of persecuting myself and saying it's all my fault, when really, like, an eating disorder is almost like an injury as well. Like, it's not someone's fault. It's something that happens or grows, and there's a trigger for it, and then it's very hard to get out of that, which is why I started with the counsellor that I've had since I was 21, and that was from 14 to 21. I didn't really have help with that, or didn't speak about it. I tried to hide it. I mean, it was pretty obvious for my parents to see.
The people closest to you are the, like, ones more likely to catch it.
And I wouldn't eat with a family at dinner or anything. I would eat my own food. I would make my own food, and it was never with any carbs.
So it was more about your eating habits than what
habits.
You looked like,
exactly.
Or anything.
Exactly. Well, I also would... I was probably 10 kilos lighter than I am now when I was at my lightest. I think it was the eating habits that were very obvious to people around me. And I'm very rigid about when I eat and what I eat. And I'm still like that. I try to be better at having more of a flow with when I have my food. But I'd be lying if I said I was good at that. Like, I'm very set with my times and when I need to eat and the hours in between each meal. But yeah, I think it's just such a big thing in sport and it's really not spoken about.
Interesting that you say that, because it was about a year ago I was speaking to another player who was telling me that it was a bit of an issue within women's tennis.
Massive
that
issue.
Other players had spoken to her about it. I don't know if they were asking for help or advice, but they definitely opened up. And this, unless I just hadn't listened closely enough, this was the first time I'd heard about that. I don't remember any top player. Maybe I'm wrong here.
I think Madison Keys has spoken about
but
a little bit.
It's not...
spoken about.
It's not touched upon.
And I wouldn't have spoken about it either when I was younger or... To be honest, in the last couple of years is when I've started to be a bit more open about it, because I am getting older and I can see that my career is not going to last much longer and I want to give to, younger players. It's a bit like a mentor, I guess. Like, I want younger players in the UK to feel like they can come and speak to me about those things and ask me questions and ask me advice and can see that it is quite, like, prevalent in sport and not to feel so alone with it, I guess, because I felt very alone with it at the time.
100%, because when people don't talk on it, the link between the emotions and the things you were going through with the injuries and this with the eating habits and all of that problem is, to an outsider, obviously not people like your parents who know you so well, it is more or less invisible.
Yeah.
So no one's going to pick up on that of their own accord. No.
And also when the injuries happened, it's also a trigger for the eating disorder to be worse, because obviously I can't do as much exercise. I don't feel like I deserve the food. And then a lot of it is about having the judgment of your figure. And even though I get compliments for my figure or whatever, that is almost like, that means I can't lose it. Like, what happens if I lose it? Then, like, that's going to be really obvious. So then it's like the fear of gaining weight or whatever. And because I can do much, it obviously then made it worse for a bit.
Would you rather people just didn't comment on what you look like, full stop? Or is that a natural human thing that we can't get away from?
I think it's individuals have to work on being happy with themselves, which I don't think I am yet, because otherwise I wouldn't let those comments affect me.
Where do you think you are with it compared to early teenage years?
Oh my gosh, so far, like, I've basically beaten it, kind of thing. It only comes up when there's certain triggers that happen, and I can notice it a lot quicker, and I won't keep going with it for too long. So it might last a few days where I'm not eating properly, and then I'll be like, Katie, stop, like, this is not going to get you anywhere.
So it's not necessarily eliminating the whole problem, but it's noticing when it's rearing its head and knowing how to suppress it.
Yes, and it will always rear its head. I don't think you ever, maybe I'm wrong, but for me personally, I think I will never not have thoughts. It's just how I fight them and how often I give in to them. But that's getting a lot less. Like, this year, it was just after spraining my ankle in India. And that wasn't great for, like, 2 or 3 weeks. But, I mean, that was quite a while, whereas I'm hoping, like, if I do have a little hiccup, it'll be a few days. Like, getting it down to a few days would be ideal.
You mentioned triggers, Katie. Do you remember what the initial trigger was? And because you would have been quite young, I guess, in comparison
It was to get in better shape, like lose a bit of puppy fat, I guess.
So was
what
it?
I call it.
Tennis related?
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't just general life, looking on social media, that kind of thing?
No, for me it was, I wanted to lose weight and I wanted to do it for tennis as well. So yeah, I was on a diet, but I was only meant to be on it for 3 weeks or so as a kickstart, and then I just carried on with it and got fixated on it. So,
and then I guess the irony is that in the long run, although you did it for tennis purposes, it was actually, is it fair to say, detrimental to your tennis?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, which also I've had to try and tell myself that I don't 100% know that it's the reason for all of these injuries, because I could have got those anyway.
Right.
We don't know that. But it would definitely have impacted how strong my body was, and any kind of bone bruising, the first question is always about food, and now whenever anything happens, it's always the first question for me.
And is that because you've been so open about it with professionals?
Yeah. And I think it's been more in my later years that I've been open with it. No one knew about it before I was 21. I hadn't spoken it. So yes, they might have noticed. And yeah, sorry guys, didn't have my period. Any boys that are uncomfortable with that,
they can switch off.
I didn't have my periods for like 8 years at all. So obviously doctors noticed that and would question it, but I was like, well yeah, I'm doing loads of exercise for tennis. So it was kind of brushed under the carpet a little bit, and people didn't really read into it more. So I got away with not having to say it. I wasn't ready to say it because I wasn't ready to change.
How do you feel the people that you've spoken to, in terms of doctors, in terms of professionals that are there to help you and your body, what have they done to help you in this situation? Or do you feel like it had to be a big move on your side of things?
I think it had to be a big move on my side. But also I think when I was younger, if someone doesn't have periods, there's something going on in your body. Like any of the girls that might listen to this, if you don't have your periods, there is an imbalance and that needs to change. Especially if you want to be strong enough for what we're trying to do. I think the doctors should have read into that more, like questioned that more and got to the bottom of it, instead of, okay, yeah, she does a lot of exercise, she doesn't have her periods, okay.
Scarily like, easy not, to brush off though.
Yeah, it's not, I think it's getting better now, because people have spoken more about female health and everything. Back then it was not so, I don't know, common, or, well, it was common in terms of people wouldn't have had their periods, but I don't think it was spoken about, and I don't think doctors really wanted to go down there. I don't know. That sounds weird. Down that avenue.
Okay, we got a laugh. 20 minutes, no laughs, but we have drawn one out there. So Casey, with your years of experience and getting to know your own body, with some help, were able to address what needed to change. And I guess with your own experiences, has that made you more alert to it in other people? For example, in tennis circles, are you able to spot it?
Yeah.
And do you feel that you're able to approach people over it or not?
I think I would speak about myself first to make them feel more comfortable opening up if they wanted to.
And are you comfortable doing that?
I'm more than comfortable now. Yeah.
That's
nothing
fair.
Else to say. That's about good. That.
So
hence why we're speaking on a podcast.
Exactly. We're just trying to open up, I guess, that conversation more.
Yeah.
In your estimation, I know we don't have any official stats here. I didn't want to go into this completely blind, so I did do a little bit of research on this last night. And just in terms of the impact of it among athletes, because like I say, I'd just not really considered it massively. So when you mentioned it, I thought, wow, okay, I wonder. And so obviously someone else had mentioned it last year. In terms of I saw something online. I'm not sure how accurate this is.
Yeah.
But it said that eating disorders more prevalent among females who do sport than females who don't. So more prevalent among athletes. And you said about kind of the motivation for the tennis. In your estimation...
Also... Yeah, sorry.
No, I'll finish. No, come on. You go.
Well, I was going to say also we're constantly being like examined about how much muscle mass we have, or are you like cardio fit enough or in shape for your sport? But that, I think for females and social media presence can come across more as I need to stay thin or in good shape. And yeah, I think it's unhealthy.
Okay, I've got two percentages now because you've just given me another one. I've mentioned social media briefly. You said that wasn't the initial trigger for you. No. But
I was too young.
Okay. Exactly. That was a different time, wasn't it? We're old now, Katie.
Oh my God. I'm nearly 30.
We are slightly old at this point. But okay, so that wasn't really... We had MySpace or something.
MSN.
Okay, no one, anyone listening to this under the age of 15 or 16.
Try and get my crush to see me logging out and in again. Everyone did it.
But massively Instagram, TikTok, all the rage right now.
Honestly, if I was growing up now, I don't know how they do it.
I'm very grateful for growing up in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. But percentages, okay. So in terms of it being a trigger, I guess it's subjective, but do you think within athlete circles the trigger is more likely to be sport or social media?
Nowadays I think social media. Personally, I have to come off social media fairly regularly because I can feel myself slipping down that, I guess you can call it like vanity kind of road of wanting to look good or seeing like people in great shape and posing, which is very fake,
hyper edited.
Exactly. But I have to take breaks because mentally I can tell that it's affecting me,
and that shows the progress that you've made. Because yes, to an extent that problem, as you said, is going to rear its head, but with the progress you've made, it doesn't have control over you like that. You now have a degree of control over it.
Yeah.
You can manage it.
Yeah.
So that's that kind of is just something that crossed my mind there in terms of triggers, whether it be social media or whether it be sport and improvement on that front. I was going to say with you now being able to identify it more, we've said it's not been spoken about a lot. Do you have any idea of like in the ITF WTA circles, a percentage of players that might be impacted?
I don't know, but like I wouldn't be surprised if it was 50%, you know. I really wouldn't be surprised. Just because I think it's massively on, I think people talk about food a lot anyway, and I do notice when I've been out for dinners with groups of girls, it's always like, oh, I shouldn't really be having that, or oh, I'm gonna go for a salad tonight. Like, I do think it's on people's minds a lot. It's just how extreme they are with it.
Something that I've noticed kind of because my background is not in tennis, I kind of introduced myself to tennis, hello tennis world, but coming into those circles, I think it's one of those things that when you're in the thick of it, you don't notice it so much because it's always there. But it struck me, people love the food, which is fine, understandable. But that is very obvious. And obviously it's something you've got to think about. So that's very much there. The other one was image. Everyone commenting on what everyone else looks like. And it's so rampant. It's just, I think it's something that's been there so long that it's just,
you just can't
as
help
natural
it.
As breathing.
Yeah.
And the combination of those two things, a little bit of a recipe for disaster, so we shouldn't be surprised, I guess, that this is happening.
Recipe for disaster, literally.
And that's where this has led to, but really glad to hear the progress that you've made in terms of, starting at 14... It's a long time to be dealing with that, and for a percentage of that time on your own, which I guess leads us to this final, you've kind of touched on it, but you were quite strong that you wanted to do this follow-up and that you wanted to get these experiences out there for people to have access to listen to. So what do you want the outcome of this to be?
I guess for people to not feel like alone in their thoughts and emotions towards tennis life and how it can get you down sometimes. I'm a massive advocate for speaking to someone, and counselling I think is a great thing if people have the ability to do that, either financially or like they're being helped like with insurance or financially to go and do that. Definitely do it. Like, it changed my life and has allowed me to reach a higher ranking than I would have been able to. And also I think anyone who's listening who plays and wants to speak to me, I am more than happy to speak to them. I'm very open about it, and I wouldn't ever then tell people what they've said to me. Yeah, I guess I want to help other people, and I can see that that's a career after tennis that I might want to do. So we can start now.
She's finding her way, and I can vouch for Katie being a very trustworthy person and always really appreciate her openness and her honesty. So Katie, thank you for feeling like you could share that. I think in these sporting circles, there's so often this feeling that talking about these kinds of things looks like weakness. Everyone is looking for that 1% to get one up on everybody else. But I think you're a great example because you're as tough as they come. There's been five years of an absolute roller coaster.
I was going to say, I don't think it's weakness. I always think when you get past those things, it actually shows your strength.
And this is what I'm saying, you're a key example of that, because so many players could have understandably hung up their rackets and gone on to their psychology career.
Yeah.
But you're still out here fighting, and it just goes to show that, you know, it builds character. And you're one of the toughest, Katie.
Oh, thanks. So, life lessons.
Big life lessons. There we go. Fist bump on this one.
I think everyone's tough. Anyone who's choosing the sport that we play, you're tough.
Sometimes it's just putting one foot in front of the other, isn't it? Yeah. And that's a step that, even if you feel like it's a slow step, it's still a step in the right direction. So important to keep that perspective. Katie, thank you very much. Will there be a part three?
No, people don't want to hear my voice again.
There might not be a part three, but there might be a Katie Dunn podcast.
Yeah, do you know what? Anyone wants to chuck some ideas out to me, please do, because I would love to continue this.
Where can they find you online? What do you want to throw out? Your Instagram handle, Twitter, is it the same?
It's the same. Just search my name. Remember to put Katie with a Y.
Exactly.
And DM me some ideas, people.
There can't be many Katie Dunns. You'll
and
find
if you're
her.
Good looking, take me out.
We'd almost made it.
I'm joking.
To throw something in there. Katie will be Katie, and I hope that you've enjoyed listening to her. Katie, once again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello there. I didn't feel like I needed to intro this particular episode of the podcast. It seemed quite self-sufficient, but I'm just jumping in here to say that there won't be a new podcast episode for the next couple of weeks. The main reason for this being that I'm commentating on Roland Garros for Eurosport over the next fortnight, but I'm hoping that we'll be back with an episode focusing on the Surbiton Trophy, which is the first official tournament of the grass court season in the UK. It's an ATP Challenger and W100 ITF event, so that's the highest level of ITF competition for the women. And that takes place during the second week of Roland Garros, so hoping to be back with you the week after the French Open finishes. I want to thank Katie for her willingness to chat and to be so open, but also for her desire to help other people And if while you were listening to this episode, you thought of someone that it might be of help to, or just felt like you wanted to share it with more people, feel free to share it online and to forward it onto whoever you want. Always great to get more people listening, particularly when Katie has been so open. So thank you to Katie. Thank you to you for listening. Until the next episode of the podcast, you can follow it on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK and on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. And you can follow myself on both platforms at Abigail Tennis. And I will see you at the grass court season.